The city of Mitchell hosts SDPB's newest broadcast tower. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, June 4th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we explore the anatomy of a radio tower. We'll talk with SDPB engineers and visit the site of the network's latest full-power infrastructure offering. Plus, we head into downtown Mitchell for a visit with the city's newest mayor. Jordan Hansen welcomed us into his office to talk about communication, leadership, and what a city of around 15,000 needs to grow into the future. Before we leave Mitchell, we will also stop by the beach to meet two sunbathers working on their tans. We'll close today's show with a look at Lake Mitchell and what it means to get ready for a massive drainage and dredging project. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. And if you are listening from the Mitchell, South Dakota area, we might sound a bit better than we have in the past. That's because we're coming to you now from SDPB's newest tower. The new station, KWSD, is at 89.1 FM, and it was granted as a result of a 2021 FCC filing for new non-commercial FM stations. We'll get to what that all means here in just a minute. But what it means for you is that the coverage in an area that was previously served by fringe signals from Brookings, Reliance, and Vermilion is a whole lot better. The latest full-power radio station in the SDPB network serves communities within approximately 30 miles of Mitchell. And that includes you, Parkston, Ethan, Armour, Stickney, Plankinton, Woonsocket, Roswell, Salem, Alexandria, Bridgewater, and more. As the people behind the microphones, we don't always know how the engineering works. So we invited Severin Ashes, SDPB's Director of Engineering and Operations, to come to the SDPB Kirby Family Studio for an update. Here he is describing the process of building and operating a radio tower.
We've been serving Mitchell since 1992 with a translator booster station. Okay. And through the years, the Mitchell community, the translator is just small enough that it's an unlicensed, or it's licensed, but it's unprotected license.
Okay.
So it just covered the Mitchell proper, if you would. And there were some other commercial stations that went on the air in the last 8-9 years that were interfering with our signal. But because it was a booster, we had no recourse to stop that interference. So it's been on our plan, our roadmap, for the last 15 years to get a full-powered, protected license in Mitchell. But unfortunately, the FCC, the way they work with licensing, those windows only come open like once every 10 years.
Okay.
So we've had to wait for a window to open to apply for the license, and that happened in 2020 and 2021. We applied for it, went through the scoring system, and we were awarded a license to build a complete full power station in Mitchell, KWSD, that 10x the signal coverage of our broadcast in Mitchell, which put us up to Woonsocket, Artesian to the north, Parkston, Ethan to the south, over to White Lake to the west, and over to almost the Salem exit on the interstate going back to the east.
Did we have a tower? What was the infrastructure, I guess, is what I'm wondering, that comes after the licensing?
So we did have to plan infrastructure. The nature of the translator is a very small, lightweight antenna.
Okay.
So the current structure that we were on would not support a full-powered station. So we went and designed another structure, and just the timing with COVID and the supply chain issues that those costs went almost triple than what we were planning. So we backed off a little bit, but we did. We finally found a structure that was being abandoned by another communications company just north of where we were.
Okay.
That we could pick up for the third of the cost of the original budget. So we did find a structure, and we started building the site. It was just the tower. There was no building. There was nothing else on the property.
Okay.
So we secured that, and then, of course, the budget is always is always a fine point to these projects, mm-hmm. and keeping that in line. Fortunately, we've heard through the years, through the community members in Mitchell, that they wanted a stronger signal, and they wish we would have one and to stop the interference. So our friends of SDPB got involved, did some local fundraising, and they raised 80% of the project funding. It was funded through local support in Mitchell to bring a full power station to the area.
That's pretty cool.
It is. It is. And Mitchell has a has a place in my heart. My mother's family's from Mitchell, and I grew up there for a few years and in and out of Mitchell all the time.
So. And Mitchell Tech, you went to school?
I went to went to Mitchell Tech for satellite communications. So it was a really nice project for me to work on.
It's a homecoming for you in a lot of ways, and a way to serve, give back to the community that gave so much to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. All right, help us understand the anatomy of a tower.
So a tower structure, it's a structure of steel. That structure there is 199 feet tall. And we chose that, it was available, and we worked with it, but it almost mirrored what we originally spec to begin with that we were going to build. Okay. So it was a 190-foot tower, self-supporter, so there's no guy lines, nothing, and it just sits in the middle of a field just off of Haven Street on West Mitchell.
So what sorts of... lighting, paint, safety, what kind of requirements for, daily maintenance or monthly? Help us understand how your engineering team keeps this infrastructure up and running.
It's below 200 feet, so FAA regulations doesn't require any lighting below 200 feet because we're not close to an airport.
Got it.
So there's no FAA, no lighting that we had to worry about, and there's no paint because there's no FAA regulations at that site. We still have to register it, and we still had to get FAA approval to have the structure there. When we were building the site, we moved in a prefab building, installed an FM transmitter in it, and all of the control circuits that monitor that site, which is we call it a SCADA system, which is reading a smart building, if you will, nowadays in the common world of building automation, home automation, tell if your door's open or if your air conditioner's on. We've had that for decades in our industry. So the guys, when they installed the transmitter, they also installed our monitoring system, which we have complete remote control of the transmitter and surrounding environmentals, as well as we've got security cameras around the tower. There is a current fence. Our FCC regulations states that we have to secure the fence area, so no one can jump over and climb or accidentally climb it.
Mm-hmm.
So they maintain the perimeter, the building, tower, but more importantly, they go in and routine checks of the equipment. We visit a site at least once a month.
Mm-hmm.
To do a once-over on the tower, the structure, the building, make sure the HVAC is working. And, of course, we've got alarms down that go back 24/7 to our NOC, our Network Operations Center in Vermilion.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's ever any parameters, AC, heating, or power levels in that area that are below our threshold, they'll call an engineer and they'll travel out to Mitchell and fix it.
Yeah.
Along with that,
24/7,
24/7.
Ice storm, wind storm.
Ice storm, wind storm,
snowstorm,
and
rain storm.
Those are the opportunities that these guys are out in the field a lot. Because when the uptime of our transmitters are very important to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's one reason why years ago, before myself, our director of engineering, assistant director of engineering that had built this network, starting in the late 60s, they built it into the plan that we have backup generator power at every one of our facilities.
Okay.
So if there is a grid outage, our backup, the generator backup power starts automatically. and keeps the transmitter on the air. And this is twofold. A, to deliver their programming out, but it also is a part of our emergency alert system throughout the state. South Dakota Public Broadcasting is part of the state EAS plan. We are designated the LP1 in that area, which is the alerting other stations in the geographic area look to our stations to alert off of. If there's an active Amber Alert or an EAS alert out of our transmitter, their systems are looking at our signal, and they'll alert off of the EAS system that's broadcasting from our transmitters.
Yeah. So big public safety component then.
Absolutely.
To this network. How many towers across the state?
We have active towers that are supporting broadcast. It's right around 52.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how many engineers are maintaining all that?
Seven.
Seven. Well done. 24/7.
Yes.
And windstorms, snowstorms, heat events, and
right.
all of that. That's yes. a big job for you to take care of.
Thankfully, I've got good engineers
yeah.
throughout the state that are very dedicated, and they come prepared, and our plans are to plan for the worst, and there's no hoping in our business. So, we plan for those worst days, the power outages, multiple days, and yeah. have redundancy and backups. And
what's your worst weather event that you've had to navigate with a tower in South Dakota in your time here?
Mine had been a storm in the early 2000s. Then, because I started with South Dakota Public Broadcasting as a field engineer, an RF mm-hmm. engineer, I actually I was assigned to the Reliance KTSD tower site, and it was a huge storm. The interstates were closed for, at that time, it was a day. The storm had broke, and south of Mitchell South just hit a huge ice storm, and it took down over 100 power poles. Our trip microwave site, we've got a tower communication system throughout the state that does a non-internet dependent signal throughout the state from tower to tower, feeding our transmitters and other communications in the areas. But we lost power at our trip site, and our portable generator that we had on a trailer was located in Reliance at KTSD, and all the roads were closed.
Yeah.
So I knew a cattle rancher up north of Ocoma, mm-hmm. and I knew he had to feed his cattle. So I called him, and we actually hopscotched from snowbank to snowbank.
Wow.
With shovels in hand and making sure before we drove through a snowbank that there was no cars or anything, stuck in there.
Yeah.
Got up, started the generator, got to the site, got the generator started. And it took us a long time. I drove from Reliance, back roads from Reliance, to Trip, which is south of Mitchell, with the generator started. I didn't shut it off. the Trip generator was operational, but we were getting some faults on our SCADA, our telemetry out of the site.
Okay.
There was some odd readings there, so we knew sure. something was happening, and we had to get there to get proper power into that system to feed the rest of the network. Hauled the generator down there and hooked it up, and I think that generator ran straight for almost 2 weeks before
wow.
we could get grid power back.
Wow. That's SDPB's Director of Engineering and Operations, Mr. Severin Ashes. We wanted to know more about this tower in Mitchell, so we asked for a tour. Producer R. Youngeman and I headed to Mitchell, and we met up with Eli Koppenhaver. He is one of SDPB's field engineers who unlocked the gates to our newest tower.
A lot of equipment noise for sure, but as far as our sites go, this is actually one of our quieter sites. And that's mostly because of this transmitter is a liquid-cooled transmitter. And so It's got a system of pumps and hoses, which moves most of the heat outside, which really helps us. We don't have to use quite as much air conditioning in this site. A lot of our heat can just be moved outside, and especially in the wintertime, really saves on energy and just helps when you're inside here. It's not deafeningly loud with all the fans running and stuff like that.
All right, tell us about the equipment that's in the room, what it's doing, what it looks like.
Sure. So here we've got a state-of-the-art Gates Air liquid-cooled transmitter. That takes the audio and data from the studio in Vermilion. We receive that via the state network, and then that audio goes through. We insert our EAS alerts, you know, for your severe thunderstorms, tornado warning, stuff like that. Then that goes through our HD radio encoder, importer, exporter system. That's what adds classical music on our HD2 for people who have HD-capable radios. Then that goes into the transmitter, which takes that audio data, modulates it, and then pushes it out as a radio frequency, which you can receive in your car, truck, home, really anywhere you want to listen.
How often do you have to come up here for maintenance, to check on things, talk about emergencies, you know, something goes down? What's your job in maintaining and repairing this equipment and this site?
We really try to incorporate as many redundancies as we can. The vast majority of our sites have redundant exciters, so we try to back ourselves up as much as possible so that in the case of an equipment failure, we can minimize the impact to the signal over the air. We also have backup generators, so in the case of a power failure, we maintain those so that we can stay on air as long as possible, usually having at least a few days of fuel on site. But yeah, we've got, it's a big network, so we stay pretty busy with maintenance and stuff.
You go across the whole state?
Yes, yep. I'm primarily on the east side, but in any given day, you can find me anywhere between Sioux Falls, Mitchell, Beersford, Vermilion, Aberdeen, kind of anywhere in between.
Where'd you get your training? Where'd you go to school?
That's a complicated question. I worked for about 5 years for a network of stations based out of Fargo. There we had 28 or so signals across 5 states. I didn't really have a ton of formal education. I did some work with the Cleveland Institute of Electronics, but they went out of business before I finished that program. So a lot of it's been self-taught, kind of on-the-job training. I mean, every day you're learning. There's never, it's hard to predict what any given day is going to be, especially, you know, every day is dictated by equipment failures or just different things that pop up for maintenance needs. Meeting with contractors at the sites, tower crews, etc. This is a really nice site. It's everything in here is brand new, state of the art, and should really give many years of reliable service to the people of Mitchell and the surrounding area.
Eli Koppenhaver is one of SDPB's field engineers. Now you can join SDPB in Mitchell to celebrate the KWSD 89.1 FM signal this Friday, June 6th. From 5 to 9 p.m. on Main Street. We'll celebrate with live music and activities for all ages. After the break, we head from the Mitchell Tower to City Hall, where we will check in with Jordan Hansen, Mayor of Mitchell. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's continue our look at the Mitchell community with a conversation with its newest political leader. Jordan Hansen is the mayor of Mitchell. We sat down with him in his office last week.
You know, the crazy story is I tried to do some development. I'm like in real estate, and I tried to do some development things, and it just wasn't easy, or things were tough, or there's some things I just didn't like from the city aspect. That was kind of what started, like, maybe I should just run for mayor and make things easy, you know, because sometimes you go to City Hall and you don't get all the information you're looking for. You know, nothing bad about the staff or anything, but
right,
you know,
yeah.
It comes from a different aspect. Like, don't tell me I can't do something without telling me like the avenue for success. So that's why I kind of ran on communication as well. So going forward now, if anyone asks something, I'm like, I know both sides of the coin, you know, basically, where it's like I can see it, look at both aspects. If you're trying to build something or bring a restaurant or put an addition on your house or whatever the case is, start a business, I can tell you from both avenues what you need. You know, government should be here to help, not here to put up roadblocks.
Yeah. And the people in the city agreed with you, and here you are.
Yeah, here I am. I feel like I'm doing a good job. You know, I do a lot of communicating, and here we are communicating with the folks. And, you know, I do a lot of Facebook stuff, and I started writing articles in the newspaper and telling everyone things. And sometimes I get scolded for the things that the city does, but I'd rather have everyone know what's going on so they can voice their opinion, because we work for them.
Tell us a little bit about what they want. You put on Facebook, like, tell me the top three things that you want out of Mitchell. What are some of the things, you know, other than the things that they're maybe dissatisfied with, the things that they say, this would make Mitchell a better place, a better town to live in?
So the top three things that always come up, and I do this frequently just to get a gauge. Number one, hands down, every single time is more activities, things to do, kids stuff. What are my kids going to do, especially in the winter? Because if you have a 2 to 5 year old and it's freezing cold 6 months out of the year, what do you do with your kids? You know, we have some good fun things, but you can only go bowling and go to the movie theater so many times in 6 months. I mean, I have a 2.5 year old and they just have a 1 hour time frame of anything, and then they just lose it and go off the rails, and you need a different activity, you know. So you kind of got to putz around and go to different things, and that's the big thing, is activities.
So how much of that is, you know, city parks and rec kind of and how much is like community development?
Yeah, we do have a very robust park and rec system. We have we have more parks per capita or park and rec thing than most places in South Dakota and even the country. We have so many park and rec things, but a majority of it is outside, you know. And you're right, we need more private and industry enterprise to take over and take some of those spots. But again, it's really risky, especially if you're coming from a different town. What do I do? What are the regulations? Is there a market to support it? Will the people support me? You know, so that's kind of, again, it goes back to communication. I want to be the guy that's here to help out and say, this is how you do it. And then also, we're here to support you.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your vision for growth in Mitchell. You've got some population goals, some economic development goals. What are they?
Yeah. You see my sign. I made a mock-up road.
Over your shoulder, there's a Mitchell population 20,000 sign.
So that was my
aspirational.
That was my, and it's all over in my office. I want to keep that stuff on top of mind. Okay, the reason for that is, you know, a lot of people when I was running said they want, let's just name 10 stores, you know, Target or Aldi's or Buffalo Wild Wings, whatever. So one of the first things I did was I started cold calling all these businesses and saying, what's it take to get your business here? And most of them said, we don't go to markets unless they're over 20,000 people. And I was like, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. The town wants this. We need 20,000. Then that's the goal. That's the big overarching 10, 15, 20 year goal. You know, so now what do we do to put in place? And then I ask, why would you move away from Mitchell? Or what keeps you, you know, you graduate high school or you graduate one of our colleges and you move away. What made you move away, or what didn't keep you here? And typically it's what you do in your free time. You know, what can I do with my kid, or what can't I do with my kid? What do I do with my 22-year-old wife I just married, you know what I mean? Before, well, how do we go out? What do we do? Is there fun activities? And it's always indoor winter activities. So that's kind of been my focus, is that. So, I mean, I brought some comedy shows to Mitchell. During the summer, we brought back Arts in the Park, which is a huge art vending show. I've done a couple motivational seminars, trying to bring as much stuff back as just humanly possible, you know, to get people. And it's hard because, I mean, the mayor shouldn't be going and doing all these events constantly. You know what I mean? But it's, part of it is inspiring the community to, like, hey, you can do this too.
Yeah. So that's how you see leadership. I also look around and I see a lot of leadership books, including The Art of War. So what's your vision of leadership?
Lead not from the front always, not from the back always, but kind of lead from the middle. So you can see what's going on in the front and you can see what's going on in the back. And you kind of look around and say, you know, you don't want to be at the front because then you have no idea what's going on all the time. You know, you can't lead from the top always. You have to be with all of the people. Yeah, you know, kind of like if you're in a big group of travelers, you don't want to be in the front because you have no idea what the person in the back is doing. If you're in the back, you have no idea what direction you're going. If you're in the middle, you know, with all the people, you can be a leader of the people, like our country was intended, of the people, by the people, and for the people. So that's kind of what my goal is. You know, when I need to be out front, I'll jump out front. If I need to be in back doing a supportive thing, that's what I'll do. Yeah. So most of my time is spent either here or in my vehicle driving around looking at stuff. And yeah, you'll see books all over my office and all kinds of accessories, you know, fun stuff to keep me.
Yeah, inspirational things to look up at. And tell me a little bit of, you graduated from Mitchell High School then?
Yep.
And where'd you go to college?
I didn't go to college.
You did not go to college, you went straight into business.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Started the workforce right away, and then I started buying businesses or starting businesses of my own. A lot of them didn't work out, but that's one of the best educations. And then I got a couple that worked out really well, and then real estate was by far my best. And then, you know, that's when I was leading large groups of contractors and teams. And going forward, I was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense, you know. And I had to take my own capital, risk my own money, do all the own work. And then that's when you realize it's kind of like a eat what you kill thing, you know. Like, I don't just get a paycheck every month for showing up to work 8 to 5. Like, I got to create the income myself.
Yeah, there's lessons from that you take into city government.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, opportunity doesn't just fall on your door. That's why I said when I took over, I started cold calling people constantly, because Target doesn't just randomly show up into a town that's had very minimal growth for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So that's why, tell me what we need, and that's what I'm going to work for.
Do you have an economic development office? How have other elements of city government responded to you?
I'm a little different, so they've responded to me differently, but I think we're starting to get on the same page on a lot of stuff. We don't have an economic development office that's governmental, but we have one across the street that's a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say not all of our goals align all the time. You know, like you said, I didn't go to college, but I see development in the real world because that's my business.
Yeah. It's your lived experience. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, some people might have gone to college for 4 to 8 years to learn economic development. Well, I was actually doing it for 48 years. So obviously not everything aligns, but you know, we're working together is a good thing, right?
Yeah.
So we're working together now, and hopefully we start turning this thing around.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the big challenges in Mitchell, the growth, economic development, things to do, Lake Mitchell. That's a big project moving forward. We're going to head out to the lake after we talk to you and take a look around and see how people are using it here in the middle of the day. You inherited a big problem with big solutions on the table. Tell me a little bit about where that's at right now for you.
I got kind of lucky because there was a big vote at the same time on what to do. And I had a proposed solution. And I mean, that was never going to come up unless this vote failed. But it passed the same time I won the election. So I don't hardly have to work on it at all because we have an engineering company that took over and the city already passed the financial portion of it. So that project will start. We're going to drain the lake at the end of this fall. And then that project should go through the next couple of years. And then we'll be done.
But you had a different idea.
I did.
And what maybe should happen. But then what I hear you saying is the people spoke in a vote.
Correct.
And so it was very easy for you.
Yeah, it's easy. Yeah.
To go forward with what they have asked you to do.
Yeah.
What do you understand about the engineering of this? What are the complexities that maybe you thought should have been rethought?
I don't think it's that complex. I think we're going to drain the lake. We're going to scoop out all the stuff on the bottom and we're going to fill it back up. I mean, it's hard to argue with a plan that simple. You know, my plan was much more different and had a lot more biology and science behind it, which is very difficult to explain. So
aeration.
Yeah. I mean, the simplest way is you don't put fish in a bucket without putting a bubbler in there or a fish tank, you know, and there's a bacteria you can put in lakes to help clean it up, kind of like probiotics for your gut, you know, like it's good bacteria versus bad bacteria. So not to get super deep into it because we're never going to have to deal with that, but maybe unless in the future.
Yeah.
But
how long does the dredging project take? How many years?
3 to 4 at most. 3 years for the project. And if we don't get a lot of rain, it'd take 4 years counting the refilling of the lake.
So how is that going to impact life in Mitchell?
Nobody knows. However, it's probably going to be a pretty amazing spectacle to go look at. It's going to be one of the largest drain and dredge projects in the United States and quite possibly the world, other than the only times they ever really do this is like oil spills. So it's going to be a very large engineering spectacle for the entire country. So
yeah.
I imagine people coming to look and go, holy cow, this is crazy. I mean, you got 700 acres of a lake completely drained. I mean, I imagine there's going to be obviously, some people are going to say this is terrible, but I think a lot of people are like, well, that's cool. Something's actually getting done.
Yeah. You live on the lake?
I do. Yeah. Not directly adjacent to the lake, but just right on the other side of the road, and I have a great view.
Yeah, so you'll have a great view of everything that's happening.
Yes.
The mayor is looking over the project and is monitoring.
I got a side-by-side. I'm going to drive around there like it's Mad Max and run through the dust all the time. So, yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on it.
So what are the costs, the hit to the economy locally that you hope to rebuild? How are you foreshadowing that?
The total cost is $25 million to do the whole project. And in the grand scheme of things...
We're paying for that how?
it'll be sales tax money.
Okay.
We put down $4.2 million roughly in cash, and the rest is going to be financed over 20 years.
Okay.
So it's about $1 million payment a year.
And then how do you prevent the same thing from happening immediately after the project?
That's the tricky part. So there's a, you know, part they
for
say...
For people who don't know, because this is a statewide audience, okay. They don't know what happened. It's a phosphorus problem.
Yeah, I deal with it every day. So I, I don't think about that. Yeah, so basically there's phosphorus, which causes algae. It's kind of like the buffet for algae to feed on, and that's what makes them grow. The engineers say that 50% comes from upstream, which goes into the lake, and the other 50% is in the lake. So if you remove everything that's in the lake, you know, there's half the problem. Previously, they just did a large wetland project, which helps filter the water going into the lake. We don't know what the how efficient that's going to be going forward, okay. But the work is done. We all hope it's going to be awesome and great and go forward from there. But, you know, we're taking a big chunk out of both parts of the problem. So hopefully it fixes it to what everyone desires.
What they dredge out of the lake, where does that go?
They're going to pile it up on a big hill nearby and then cap it with clay.
Interesting.
And maybe make a ski hill out of it. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting.
We're gonna have to talk to the engineers on this one. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a picture in the other office. I'll show you when we're done.
Okay. All right. So you sound like you're kind of excited about it.
Hey, I'm just excited that something's getting done. You know, part of me was like, man, if, you know, thinking about it, I mean, I'll tell you a story. So thinking about it, it's like, I'm kind of running on this and I was not in favor of the project because I feel like the other one that I looked at made more sense and it was more affordable. But then, you know, part of you thinks, man, if this vote fails and then I have to do all the work to push this through and then we do it and then it doesn't work, well, now I'm going to look like a fool, you know, and nobody wants that, right? So it's like...
So you're just happy that somebody else gets to look like a fool if
no,
it doesn't
work? No, I mean, I don't want to say that. No, I wouldn't say that. But I mean, it's like, I'm going to carry out the plan as best as I can and hopefully it works out and we're all good. But
it's the people's plan and you're going to carry it out.
Yeah, I'm just happy I don't look like a fool on my plan.
EMS services. But you never know. Yeah, let's talk about EMS services because that's also, you know, one of the challenges of a growing community is emergency services. That's also underway in Mitchell. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so congratulations to Chief Dan Polarize for pushing that through, a 95% pass vote in the county to raise taxes to pay for your EMS service. I've never seen a vote pass at 95%, let alone to raise your own taxes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's for a great thing. Because it's for EMS service. So the problem we were running into is Mitchell, the city limits, we paid for all of the ambulance outside in Davis and in Hanson County, which is probably like a 10 to 1. So like Davis and Hanson County combined, there's like a 10 to 1 land area.
Okay.
Now in Mitchell, there's 15,000 people. In Davis and in Hanson County, excluding the city limits, is 8,000. So it's roughly 1/3 of the total number of people that we were serving. We're actually not paying any sort of tax to that service.
Okay.
So what we were asking for was, and it's, they still pay their ambulance bill and whatever and the insurance, but let's say you go and pick someone else up in the country and they don't have insurance and then it goes to collections and we never get paid. The city of Mitchell eats that. So anyone on the interstate, on the highways, in Hanson County and in Davidson County. So what we were asking for is for them to impose a tax on themselves that would pay for any of that shortcoming, not for what we have, but for new employees, which is 6 employees, 2 per shift, because our EMS runs in 3 days. Shift 1 is day 1, shift 2 is day 2, and shift 3 is day 3. They work 24 hours, and then the next shift. So we have 2 people per day, so 6 total people, and that's what this roughly $700,000 is going to do, is cover the cost for those people. Because right now, the rate of calls for EMS is going up like anywhere between 10 and 30% every year. So our staff is just completely overworked. And like there's times where our ambulances, we have 3 to 4 ambulances and they were all gone at one time. So we didn't have anyone to man the station or go to another call. Yeah. So we needed to add people for that service. And then we were like, well, if we're going to add people, we'd like to add it for Hanson and Davidson County because we have all the infrastructure, the people and the equipment. Now, we're going to be able to cover everyone, and then it's not going to be a burden on the taxpayers of Mitchell. It's going to be fairly distributed for the people in Hanson and Davidson County.
Yeah, interesting.
A big win because, and sorry to interrupt, but this has been tried before in the state and failed because from what I've heard is there wasn't support from their local elected officials. And I don't know if that's true, but that's just what I've heard. Now other towns are looking to us. The state EMS board is looking to us on how we did it. And it's just really cool to be a leading example of something so great in South Dakota.
How did you do it? How did you get the buy-in? Or who was in charge of, you know, like, so when you look at how it unfolded, what would you say if another mayor called you up and said, how'd you do it, Mayor Jordan? You would say, here's what I know.
The same thing I ran on, full communication and full support of the staff, you know. Mm-hmm. So Dan polarized the chief, and then Amy Hurd, another employee, and a volunteer, and I think Ethan, fire department. They were giving presentations in multiple different towns, like on Sunday nights, on Saturday mornings, and they gave so many presentations to these towns, Hanson County, Davidson County, Mount Vernon, Ethan, all over. And I attended a bunch of them because I figured someone was going to yell at the mayor. They never did. So that's kind of nice. And they just did a lot of work all for free because, you know, they truly in their heart believe that this was the best thing for people. So one, you can't ever lose to someone that's super passionate about a project, which they were. And then I fully supported them. The city council fully supported them because we all knew it was the right thing to do. So it's just really nice to see. And it showed in the votes, 95%.
That is Mitchell Mayor Jordan Hansen. We'll have more of this conversation coming up on In the Moment after the break. This is listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back now to our conversation with Mitchell's newest mayor, Jordan Hansen. We sat down with him in his office. How are you going to monitor or set goals around your population aspirations on growing the town? How are you, you know, you're the kind of guy who wants to measure the success I'm getting from you.
Yes.
And you're not going to rest by saying, oh, that didn't work. What are some of the benchmarks that you're looking for? What are some of the initiatives that you say this should have this outcome?
So I pull numbers a lot. We have a really great city administrator, Stephanie Elwine, and then we pull information all the time. I mean, we were just looking at sales tax numbers from compared to the previous months and previous years and everything. So we're always looking at numbers, numbers, numbers. But also, I go out and talk to as many people as I can. So you got to gauge their perception, their feeling, how everything's going. You know, is things going good? Are you leaving town for events? Are you coming to town for events? Did something bad happen? Did something great happen? Like, tell me what the deal is.
Yeah.
So it's all about communication. That's why, and you'll hear me say it a lot because it's truly the most important part of, in my opinion, that campaign and for our city. So communication is a big measurement, and then also numbers, you know, so you got to kind of take everything into consideration. Numbers are kind of real, but numbers don't always tell the entire story.
All right. So
to answer your question, you know, we're going to look, I mean, it's really hard to track population, but we're going to pull building permits. Mm-hmm. We're going to pull like how many new businesses. We're going to look at sales tax numbers. We're going to look at property tax numbers. We're going to look at all that. Plus I have a ton of friends in development, and I want to know, how many houses did you build? Was it hard? Was it easy? You know, like I have a friend building a 64-unit senior living facility, $15 million. I have another friend building a 70-unit apartment complex. Super expensive, building multiple houses. I mean, those things just weren't happening before. You know. And then anyone that I know is reaching out, or anyone that I know is building like a new restaurant, and not everything's public right away, but I know about it because it's got to go through city planning and stuff. And I'll call them and I'll say, hey, I know you didn't have to make this investment. I know this is a big financial risk for you, but I just want to say thank you from the mayor and from everyone from the city, because you probably aren't going to hear that anywhere else. And they're like, you know, I had one guy, I told him, thanks for your investment into this deal and into our community. He goes, I've been developing in Mitchell for 50 years, and I've never had a mayor call and thank me for what I do. So he goes, I appreciate that. And it doesn't cost any money, you know, but making people feel good. I mean, how you feel really goes a long way for what you're going to do in the future.
Prison project. You also sent a proposal to the state saying maybe Mitchell is a future opportunity to build some kind of prison facility. Yeah, tell me about that.
The prison is such a divisive topic.
Yeah.
So the Development Corporation, which is technically not affiliated directly with the city, sent, their job is development for economic development. So they sent a letter, and they reached out to us beforehand and said, is this something you are completely against, or, you know, would you support it? And we, you know, me and some of the other people as city leaders said, yeah, we would support looking into this project to see if it's something that would make sense for our town. Now, not a lot of people want a prison in their town or their backyard or right next to their house. So I totally understand it all. But as a leader, it's really hard or impossible for me to shoot down a project without having all of the information. We don't know hardly anything about it. So we did send some letters as a city, or I guess I should say the Development Corporation sent some letters from city leaders, from county people that are county leaders, saying we want more information. We would support a prison in this community under the right circumstances, obviously.
Mm.
So it's again, it's a very divisive topic, you know, but it's 400 jobs. You know, it's a maximum security prison. And I've talked to the guy that's the head of the task force, and the amount of money that they're spending on just the rehabilitation portion is astronomical. Because most people are like, oh, not most people, I shouldn't say that, I got to quit generalizing. Many people have expressed the feeling that we just throw people in prison and then we just let them out and then they're just in rough shape after that. Well, that may be true now, but this new prison project is completely built different. It's really focused on rehabilitation before people go back out into the public with counselors and mental health facilities and how the pods are set up, not to make you miserable. You know what I mean? So they're bigger pods and more of them are going to be by yourself rather than with two or three bunk mates and clean and new and counselors and support. So it sounds like a really great project when you hear more of that. You know, if you just think of a prison, you think of Alcatraz and someone's going to swim in your backyard. And
we have a very old state prison. It's hard to
shift from that. It's older than the state itself.
Yeah, it's hard to shift from the mentality of what that is to the mentality of what corrections can be.
From what I've been told, that prison was built in 1881 and we weren't even a state until after that. It's one of the oldest prisons around that's still in operation. So it's really hard. It's really hard to...
So you're cautiously supportive under the right circumstances, but you've got a plan.
My plan is to just do whatever is right for everyone. And I know that not everything's going to make everyone happy. And I know that a prison is definitely not anywhere on anyone's top list of thing they want demanded in town. But remember, if there's 400 jobs, I mean, you got to have all those other businesses to support. You know, some people might say, I want a Buffalo Wild Wings or I want whatever business. Well, we need more population to support those businesses. Now, if we can get 400 additional employees, that's 400 more people that are going to shop at those establishments and they might feel a little bit more excited about building that there. You know, like we just recently did the soybean plant, which is a $500 million project, $500 million. And my place hotel built right during that time while it was being constructed. And I think a major part of that is we have all these construction people here. Let's put them up. And what a great time to invest because I know I'm going to be full. You know, and it's just one of those tertiary benefits having one business that catalyzes other businesses.
Are there, and when we think about the Buffalo Wild Wings or the Target, that's one area of economic development to bring in because people don't want to drive to Sioux Falls to have to go to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What are there new industries that you think of, something that you have your eye on to say, this is something if I could bring this industry to South Dakota, people from Sioux Falls would be driving to Mitchell to work there, to live there, to... Is there an industry that we're light on? You know, we hear a lot about, you know, server farms and cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Is there some area like that that you have your eye on to say, I think this could be a new industry for South Dakota and Mitchell could be the place where it grows?
I would pursue a server farm or a data center, but that's not going to be where I would put my effort and energy because nobody goes to Sioux Falls to check out a cybersecurity law firm or whatever. You know, but again, like if you could get someone to do that, you're going to have a tertiary market supporting that system. So I would support something like that or at least definitely look into it. But things that I would most likely to pursue and that I'm pursuing now is one is, you know, like the senior facility is awesome because the baby boomer generation is the largest generation in the United States. And where the baby boomers go is usually where the money's at. That's why JCPenney's and Kmart were so big, you know, and then even Toys R Us. Toys R Us was built around baby boomers' kids, and they're aging population now. So that's why if you can get the senior living facility kind of stuff going, when they move out of their homes and go into a senior living facility, those homes are going to be opened up for younger populations. You know what I mean? So you have to really think far out into the future on what you're going to do. Now, a lot of people have asked about retail, shopping, women's clothing and stuff like that. My opinion is most people don't go, and I'm not a lady shopper, so it's hard to tell. My wife will buy anything if you take her to a store. But most shopping, I think, is done online. But what you can't get online is experience-based services. You know, so I think that's kind of the big deal is experiences, especially for kids, youth sports, activities, stuff like that. Those are kind of the things that you can't get online. So that would be the stuff I would lean into as well. Now, again, if you put a go-kart track or you put a laser tag, it may not have a huge impact directly just on that. But now all of a sudden you drop a Macy's or whatever the business is right next door to that, then you're going to get a lot of that, again, tertiary spinoff market from that. So it's kind of one of those things like you place your bets here, but knowing that your big winner is probably next door.
So the small business owner who's doing retail who says, I, you know, hey, Mayor Hanson, I don't want a Target here because everyone's going to go to the big box and it's going to put my small boutique out of business. You're bringing in competition.
Yeah, I totally understand that as well. So my look at that is if you're going to bring a Target, you're going to want to place it over by the interstate, which gets a million cars a year. And the trick is to pull that traffic off of the interstate. And one thing I've recently learned is a lot of towns talk about Main Street and revitalizing their Main Street. In Mitchell, our new Main Street is really I-90. That's where the traffic is. That's where all the new development is. That's where you see your Walmart, your Menards, your Les Schwab Tires, Cabela's, your Cabela's, yeah, everything. That's our new Main Street. And it's really hard to get off of that, that train of thought. Now, everyone loves Main Street and it's really cool and it's really great. But in real estate, in business, it's all location, location, location. So now if you could bring more businesses that pull people off that interstate and then get them to go everywhere else, you're not really cutting into the pie. You're just expanding the pie for everyone else to take a larger bite out of. And that's my viewpoint.
That's Mayor Jordan Hansen. He was elected as Mitchell's mayor in 2024. After leaving the city hall, we decided to take a drive around the beautiful but troubled Lake Mitchell. Now, if you haven't been following the story, Lake Mitchell faces ongoing water quality issues due to algae blooms caused by runoff from crop and pasture lands, as well as phosphorus released from lake bed sediments. Massive plans are underway to drain and dredge the lake to address these issues. The Lake Mitchell Restoration Project begins this fall, and it will include building infrastructure, making improvements to filter runoff, and dredging the entire lake. All this is to say that 2025 might be the final summer at the lake for many in Mitchell, at least for a while. It was quiet as we parked at the beach to check out signage that had been posted warning about the presence of harmful blue-green algae. We saw no one on the water that beautiful day, but we did see some anglers dropping lines off a bridge, cyclists swooshing by on the paths, and two sunbathers in the sand. School is out for summer, and Kaylee O'Connor and Sophia Creetlow are working on their tans. I sat down on the sand to chat, and they told me what it's like to grow up in Mitchell, longing for a little sun, summer break, and an afternoon by the lake.
We're just tanning on this beach today.
Yeah, we won't be able to next year. We're just enjoying the last we have with this beach.
What's wrong with the water?
There's a lot of, algae. And it's unsafe for some people and, animals to be in. It's very gross.
Very green, too.
Kind of gross. Have you ever been in it? Do you swim in it at all?
I used to when I was younger, but not really anymore.
What happened to it?
It just got gross. Yeah. And, a lot, my parents will say it's not very safe to be swimming in, so I don't really want to swim in it.
Do you know what happens this fall and how long it will take before you can swim in the water again?
I know they're draining the lake, but is it 2 years or something like that? Or is it longer or less? I don't quite know how long it will take.
Yeah, about a few years or a year and a half or something.
What will you do during that time when the project's happening?
We'll probably have to go to Hanson Beach and tan or swim in Hanson Beach or just go explore around, go swimming at the pool.
What the people who are doing the project for the future, what do you want them to know about why the lake, the beach is important to kids, to families, to you as you grow up here?
Well, when I was younger, I would always come here to, just play in the water with my brother and stuff, and it was fun. But, now a lot of kids don't because, their parents won't let them. So if we have a clean lake, then kids will be able to come and have fun on the beaches and lakes like other small towns get to.
It's just a fun experience to be able to swim in the lake. And if you're not able to swim in the lake, what's the point of having, a lake? But since we're draining it, I hope it's going to be better for everyone else.
That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. You can join SDPB in Mitchell this Friday to celebrate the KWSD 89.1 FM signal. From 5 to 9 p.m. on Main Street, we celebrate with live music and activities for all ages. And the In the Moment team will head back to Mitchell soon for more stories from a vibrant South Dakota community. In the Moment is produced by R. Youngeman and Ellen Kester. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.